I wanted to give big updates on Trump's speech last week about communist China that you and I have been detailing for years. The documents have come out, but even more, you have federal court documents that they've told you not to release, but you're going to do that.
There's a dirty Venezuelan software package that lets you steal elections. It was in Smartmatic, where it was called SAES, Smartmatic Automated Election System. They bought an American company called Sequoia, and they put it inside Sequoia, where it was called WinEDS. That dirty package got shifted, and it's actually inside Dominion. They call their system Democracy Suite. They've been denying like hell that they have WinEDS. I'm going to prove to you that it is in their system. What's happened now is Liberty has come along. Actually, Liberty is just a new name on Dominion. It's the same corporation. So that dirty package is still inside. Trump released this last Thursday night, the CIA documents, summary of their own intelligence reporting, 04 to 20. Document 2, they talk about how they have had persistent concerns that Venezuela was developing systems to cheat elections. Well, they did, in fact, develop that software, and it was the WinEDS that I just walked you through. They are acknowledging that, yes, Venezuela developed this, and they've been stealing or trying to steal their own elections with it. Let's go to an internal Dominion email, which I'm not supposed to show anyone. This is from 2011. A guy named Craig Short, contractor for Dominion, is talking to Sherry Hadsky. You're going to see in a moment, she's the secretary with the Secretary of State of Louisiana. This is all about the WinEDS upgrade. Now, remember, you're going to see Dominion's come out and say, we don't have WinEDS. No, we never got. That's all some junk from the past. But meanwhile, their internal emails, they're talking about upgrading their system. She says, hey, confidentially, if Democracy Suites, if this runs on Windows 7 and this WinEDS runs on Windows 2003, don't we need two servers? So she knew and Dominion knew that they were, in fact, still using WinEDS. And the guy confirms, yes, that we're going to need two servers. This is an email from Eric Coomer in 2020. He's running the elections in Chicago. He's writing a guy, Goran Obradović, who's in Serbia. They're talking about setting up servers to process ballots as they come in. So this is a few days before the election. He says, 30 minutes, 12,000 ballots. We may have some timing problems. We can set up the cartridges to load overnight as they come in scare quotes, and then as they come in, meaning we're going to be uploading them, but pretending that these are ballots coming in from the field. We can then load them into the WinEDS. So here's Eric Coomer, the CTO of Dominion, acknowledging that WinEDS is being used in their system. He swore up, down, and sideways since then, as is Dominion, and he's saying our good Dominion machines don't have any of that WinEDS package in them. Here's a guy, Edmundo Rojas. You look on his LinkedIn. He's at Dominion Voting Systems, but he's also under contract as a senior product specialist to Liberty Vote.
Yeah, so they're rebranded. Don't worry, Republicans own it now. Everything's fine.
But here's another Dominion voting guy, again, writing to Coomer, establishing VPN connection into the virtual machines today to reach the county's electronic voting machines. And on the next page, our tablet arrives in Shanghai Customs. We're waiting for clearance. So the tablets you're voting on are actually going through Shanghai Customs where China gets to edit them. This is all under what's Liberty Vote. Chinese-made equipment with Venezuelans who are all in our system, that Venezuelans here in the U.S. who are now working for Liberty Vote. You trace these Venezuelans back to the same university through Smartmatic and Sequoia, and now they're in different places running our elections in the United States.
The multinational corporate intelligence conglomerates.
Chinese, Iranian, Venezuelan, they're all in on it. It's one constellation of bad actors.
And it's the Democrats and the CIA, as you pointed out, contract with people that hate us to do it, so they have plausible deniability. Oh, as they come in,
you get what's going on.
So we preload the results before they come in.
What they really do is when they set up a Dominion server for some county, they set up next to it a second machine that is the WinEDS machine. They run the election on this machine, all this stuff gets in, and what they're not telling anyone is it goes from the Dominion machine to this EDS dirty machine and then gets reported into the election reporting system. So before the results go from the county to the legitimate election reporting system, they're run through this WinEDS dirty Venezuelan software. They and only they even know it exists.
Let's add some personality to this frog. Little red right here for some lipstick. Just a few gentle strokes. There we go. A perfect little touch.
The world will be mine. These specimens have been specifically calibrated for the spread of Alpha Gal, a permanent curse on those who feast on the flesh of mammals. Real meat is finished. My ticks and mosquitoes will make sure of it. Eat the synthetic slop or starve.
Looks tasty, doesn't it?
I'm now being joined by top geopolitical analyst, strategist, and writer Brandon Weikert of 1945.com. He's also written numerous articles. Really appreciate his outlook and all the media he's been doing lately. I want to ask him a variety of questions pertaining to the Iran war, the Ukrainian conflict, the Caspian Sea, and so much more. Thank you, Brandon Weikert, for joining me on this live.
Hey, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
100%. I really enjoyed our morning show that we did on New American Journal. I wanted to follow up with you.
Yeah, that was fun.
Indeed. Indeed. So something I've been following, something you've been following as well, we're talking about it on the break, is the whole idea of Pickaxe Mountain and this kind of like magical MacGuffin. And like, we know Trump likes MacGuffins. The whole idea of like during the 12-day war with Operation Midnight Hammer, obliterating the nuclear facilities, you can see how that was sold to him, right? It just, you can kind of connect the dots. It's not a complicated picture. Mm-hmm. What do people need to know about Pickaxe Mountain? What is it? And as the markets close, and as UNC inches closer towards, issuing the orders to launch, what's going on?
Yeah, I think that's very key to remember. And I know that we all have been monitoring this, but you do kind of become numb to it. This war has really been, more than any other war, dictated to by market cycles. I've never seen anything like this before. So, you're right to point out we're at the close of markets. So probably the next 24 hours, something's going to heat up. Pickaxe Mountain is, first of all, its importance is overstated. It's a typical Trump war plan. They're really selling you on a target. They're fixating on this one thing. It's got a great name, Pickaxe Mountain. And it's sort of like the Death Star,
Right.
We're going to go in there and not, that's really what it is. This is like a Hollywood. Yeah.
Hold on really quick. Cause that's what they say. Like the Fox News people are like, we're going to drop the bunker buster and then we're going to drop the tactical nuke. And you're like, how many Top Gun movies, how many times you rewatch that?
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. I mean, this is like straight out of a Hollywood script. The difference is they're billing this as the Death Star. This isn't the Death Star, though. This is not the center of gravity for the Iranian regime. If you really want to, quote unquote, win, and I'm not advocating we do this, you've got to focus on either knocking out the regime or reopening the Strait of Hormuz.
Right.
And these are two things. The president, I think, wants to do those two things, but the president also understands we can't do those two things. It's been demonstrated now repeatedly. So he's looking for some other symbol, a symbolic target. And so Pickaxe is it. Pickaxe is a massive new facility. They started building it in 2020. It's about a kilometer or so away from Natanz, which is the other major nuclear weapons development site. It's under Granite Mountains. It's in the Zagros mountain chain. And it basically is supposed to be like the next level of Iranian nuclear weapons facility. And the goal with the facility, once it's completed, and it's not yet, my understanding, every expert I've talked to, and I've been talking to a lot of them on this specific issue.
Okay.
Every expert I've spoken to has said it's not complete and it's not fully operational as a result. So I guess this is more like the Death Star in Return of the Jedi. They're going to try to.
Right. I got that.
I can just nerd out here for a minute.
No, do we love doing that here? We love it.
Yeah, so. I know. Oh, I know. So that's how the president is viewing this. And so the idea is we'll go in late at night. Nobody's really going to be there. It's going to be sort of, they've stored supposedly the blessed nuclear dust and it's buried underground. And so, oh yeah. And so we're going to go in with the B2 and we'll do what we did last year, basically on a grander scale. Here's the problem. This facility, even though it's not yet fully complete, this facility is far harder to get to with our conventional, even the GBU-57, the Massive Ordnance Penetrator, which is the biggest non-nuclear conventional bomb that we have in the arsenal. Those were the bombs that we dropped last year and everybody made big hoopla about. But even those bombs did not obliterate the previous targets that President Trump said that they obliterated. We did not obliterate them. We damaged the outside. We collapsed some tunnels on the top. We collapsed the entryway. But those GBU-57s, as impressive from a technical standpoint as those drops were, and they were, they did not obliterate. They degraded. Okay, now the facility we're talking about at Pickaxe is infinitely harder to get to. They've done a much better job, the Iranians have, of really burying this thing. Furthermore, we don't have, and this is a key story that I'm the only one, I think, who's talking about this.
Go ahead.
So we only had maybe 20 MOPs of the Massive Ordnance Penetrator before last year's strikes. We went through 14, at least, of those MOPs in last year's strikes.
Wow.
So that leaves maybe a dozen or less, depending on what varying states they're in, of those weapons left. We don't have enough of those GBU-57s to actually do the kind of mission the president wants us to do. We can drop them, yeah, and put on a big dazzling light show, but it's not going to be enough. And so this is where I start hearing from certain people I know in the loop. They start mentioning things like the nuclear tactical nuclear weapon, and forgive me now, I'm forgetting the name of it. It is the
not a good idea thing. It's not a good idea.
It's the not a good idea thing. If you give me a second, I'll pull it up. But basically, they want to fly it in from Whiteman. It's a ground penetrating nuclear weapon, and they think that this will be the way forward, because that this is the largest. It's a very serious tactical nuclear weapon, but we can basically dial its yield. So if we want to go 0.01, or if we want to go all the way up, we can on those yields. But wow, it is certainly it's the B-6111. So there's the B-6112, which is an airburst bomb that's stored at Incirlik, Turkey. We have about 20 of those. But to do the kind of mission that the president really wants us to do, and I apologize for blanking on this.
You're totally fine.
It's B-6111, and that's a ground-penetrating nuke, a tactical nuke. Like I said, we can literally dial what yield we want it to explode at. So if we want it to be bigger, smaller, medium size, whatever, we can do that. And they're stored at Whiteman, which is where the B-2s are based out of. So they would just load those babies on, fly the B-2s in the middle of the night, and then plop them like they did last year with the MOPs, but they'd probably use the tactical nukes instead to try to collapse what was underneath the mountain. And I'm telling you right now, with all the tactical nuclear weapons in the world, even if we are able to get beneath that granite mountain and really destroy Pickaxe the way the president wants it to be destroyed, to obliterate it, that will set into motion a series of events that we will not be able to stop, to de-escalate.
I want to ask you about that, but I first want to point this out, because I've been more accurate in my predictions after adopting this mindset. I think about it like a kid going to Toys R Us, right? And it's like, oh, this thing's got all the bells and whistles. It's got the switches, the lights, it's a giant dinosaur that I want, whatever. The way they probably sell these things, they present them to Trump, that sounds like something he might be interested in. Like, just, oh, it can be dialed, you know, it's all right, Mr. President. It's just a small explosion, just a small loan of $1 million, whatever you want to say. I think you could adopt that logic. So I want to ask you about that, because you started going into that, but I wanted to just make that observation. What is the, not just escalation trap in Iran, but globally, if we use this nuclear weapon?
So you're right about how they're going to sell it. And we know Trump has he's a megalomaniac. So, you know, he loves stuff like this. And this is, and you know, I was on with another show yesterday and we were talking about how it's sort of like a perfect Hollywood ending, right? This is, and Trump thinks like this. This is how Trump thinks.
Central casting.
Central casting, exactly. So what a Hollywood finish. He's going to go in. He'll drop the B-6111. It'll knock the thing out. He'll come home, and then he'll call up the Iranians and say, okay, let's make a deal now, buddy. I've got the... But that's not how it's going to go, because what's going to happen then, the Russians and the Chinese are going to get involved. They're, and we know that he's worried about this because he put out a Truth Social post about an hour or two ago in which he was saying, I talked to the wonderful Chairman Xi, and he assured me that they're not selling weapons and they won't be giving weapons at all to the Iranians. Well, that was him preempting what I think he's worried the Chinese and Russians might do, you know, if we do drop this tactical nuke on Pickaxe and or within Pickaxe. And I think he knows what's coming. And so what'll happen is, if we drop this nuke thinking that this is the path to de-escalation, that is a mirage, and it will actually lead to uncontrolled escalation. The great late Herman Kahn referred to it as an insensate war, W-A-R, right. Wargasm. And right. That is precisely where we will be, because at that point, the Ruskies are going to get involved and the Chi-Coms are going to, and probably the Norks as well. The North Koreans will probably get involved too. So, yeah, not to enable Iran. Oh, isn't that rich? And so, you know, this is not a de-escalation. And I, by the way, I would argue even doing some ineffective, you know, attack with conventional weapons on Pickaxe is not going to be the end of the line that Trump thinks it will, because he's going to put the Iranians in a position where they have to then respond to this dazzling strike.
He's selling tickets to heaven for him. Like, that's they, what their religion, what they
believe. Heaven
what,
or hell.
Yeah, well, but, what, yeah. Well, what they believe, literally, they believe they're going to be martyred fighting the United States of America. So, like, the very idea of, like, oh, you can kill enough of these people to get them to submit, this is unlike any other conflict we've ever been involved in. It's unlike the conflict with the Arab states as well. They truly have a different mindset, and the more of them we kill, it only emboldens them more. I don't have the clip ready. I was watching it earlier this morning. It was like a guy, he's like, I'm a reporter, but now I have a gun. And, like, we have these three islands, and they're aircraft carriers, and I'm on one of these islands, and I'm waiting to kill Americans.
Yeah.
And that's their mindset, right? And that mindset,
well,
go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, we faced an enemy like this before. Famously, when the Americans went in 1965, the Battle of Aya Drang, the North Vietnamese they captured when they first landed, and this was depicted in the great We Were Soldiers Once and Young book on the Battle of Aya Drang. They captured a scout, a young North Vietnamese scout, and he was excited. And they were like, why are you so happy? He said, you don't understand. We're all in the mountains and we've been waiting. We want to kill Americans very badly. And that's the mindset that you're dealing with. We lost in Vietnam.
Right.
We lost in Vietnam. There's that truth.
Here, social. Let me read the tweet really quick. Yeah. President Xi at our recent meeting in Beijing, China, told me that he would not, under any circumstances, give or sell weapons to the Islamic Republic of Iran. And that statement included Chinese companies. Considering our relationship, I take him at his word, and besides, I am doing him very big favors also. Likewise, President Putin, despite the horrible war going on in Ukraine, the relationship remains, as it does with President Zelensky. I mean, you can't play both sides of the fence there much longer. Told me that he would not sell weapons to Iran. He understands that I do not sell weapons to Ukraine, but to NATO countries. That's insane. That is so insane. That is deranged. We've given Ukraine $300 billion. Yeah. Brandon, what do you have to say about that?
I mean, one of the reasons that we don't have enough air defense interceptors in the Middle East is because we've given so many air defense interceptors to Ukraine over the years. So, you know, this notion that, oh, yeah, well, I mean, look, the president, I don't know if he's just not in touch with reality or if they're keeping things from him information wise. We know that he's not accessing the information flows. Right. But at the end of the day, the president is not dealing in the same reality space that you and I and the rest of the world really are. I will say his comments, we need to remind the audience here. I reported this at 1945. 3 weeks ago, the Chinese surprised the world when they launched a submarine-launched ballistic nuclear missile.
Yep.
They did not tell anybody they were doing this test. That's against the international standard. You're supposed to tell the world we're doing this. It has the capability to reach, it's the JL-3, I think. It has the capability to reach San Francisco. It has the capability to hit basically any of our allies in the region, in the Indo-Pacific, including New Zealand. And the Australians and the Japanese went apoplectic when the Chinese did this. And the Chinese did it for a very specific reason. They were letting Trump know, you need to know who you're messing with, buddy. And the Russians as well, by the way, we have been told, Politico reported this during the NATO conference in Turkey. Apparently, the belief is among NATO, and I've heard this through other sources as well, so this is why I give it more credence.
Right.
Apparently, in the last year or so, Putin did want to drop a tactical nuclear weapon on the Ukrainians, and it was Xi Jinping who told him, don't do it, it's not worth it.
Don't cross that threshold.
That's right, not yet. But we are already in a place where the other two major nuclear powers in the world are sending messages that they're willing to go there. And the only reason they're not so far is because the other main nuclear power, the United States, isn't going there. But I guarantee you, if we use a tactical nuclear weapon, however low the yield is, whether it kills anybody or not, if we demonstrate the willingness to do that, it is not going to have a deterrent effect. It is going to compel those other nuclear powers to start popping off their nukes or using nukes as a more forceful diplomatic tool than they already use it as to get what they want in their regions of the world. That's just the way this works.
Right. I've heard Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson talk about this very eloquently, almost it is at a spiritual level, about the spirit of nonproliferation and what we have done to really dispel and degrade that, especially like the New START Treaty is a great example. We're in uncharted territory. What do you want, you know, an American citizen to know, someone listening to this that just goes, well, you know, I'm having a hard time finding a reason to not support this war. You know, it hasn't gotten that bad for me yet. What's coming around the corner here? Tell them about it.
Well, I think once we go there with pickaxe, there's then the issue of land incursion. And we're already seeing shaping operations take place around Bandar Abbas. You're seeing Keshem Island come into play in the Strait of Hormuz. You're seeing, obviously, a lot of talk. The president himself posted a video not long ago of him speaking in the 1980s advocating for taking Karg Island. So this has been on his mind for, you know, almost 40 years. So Karg Island is very much on the table. And what that means is U.S. ground troops. You know, he says, oh, we're going to use proxies. And I think in many instances we will try. But ultimately, we've learned this, proxy wars on the ground don't stay foreign for too long. Eventually, American troops are pulled in. Again, just look at Vietnam. Remember, Vietnam was not sold to us originally as an American war. It was an American assistance operation to help the South Vietnamese, and that rapidly devolved into an American war, and this happens repeatedly. Afghanistan, people don't remember this. Afghanistan, yes, it was an American war in the sense that we were the ones who went in, but we did not go in with regular ground troops. We went in with a cadre of special forces A-teams and CIA jawbreaker teams, and we were purposely trying to keep our footprint low in the beginning, and then it expanded once the defense industrial complex took over. And something similar, I think, is going to happen here. I think that the president is being briefed, and I think he's probably okay with trying to use Iraqi Kurds to go in to the northern part of Iran to go and try to, quote unquote, liberate Iranian Kurds, who, by the way, don't want to be liberated. The president of Iran right now, Pezeshkian, speaks Kurdish, and he was raised among the Kurds. So the Kurds of Iran are very different from the northern Iraqi Kurds. But that is that's missed upon by the Washington,
well,
D.C.
Right. And that's the whole thing. It's just it's a massive country. It's 90 million people. It's the size of Western Europe. It's not Afghanistan.
That's right. Well, and even we struggled with Afghanistan.
That's a great point, too.
But then also the Mujahideen-e Khalq is a Marxist revolutionary cult of personality group. They've been around for decades. We've supported them on and off. I am told that we are covertly rearming and retraining them. They're all scattered throughout Iran. And I think the logic is the Kurds of Iraq go into northern Iran, then the MEK kicks over some stuff in the other parts of the country, and this creates a pressure buildup on the regime. It can't withstand it. Then we're still doing bombing campaigns on places like Pickaxe. And then ultimately we land a finite amount of troops somewhere along the Iranian coastline to try to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. And I think the idea is, well, that will break the will of the Iranian regime. And again, I think this is a gross miscalculation. But I think from here, if we do the pickaxe strike that I think we're going to do, from here then it's not going to de-escalate. It's going to be, okay, we're now going up. Now, it might not happen right away, by the way. It might happen several months down the line. Remember, there was about a six-month break from the 12-day war to when we started again in February of this year. But ultimately, and I was saying after the 12-day war, we will be at war again very soon. I've been proven right about this. In fact, I almost predicted the day that we were going to start this current war.
What led you to that prediction when you were like,
I just was watching the force build up. I was watching the rhetoric. I was watching at that time what was going on with the protests and what Trump was tweeting at the time. You know, I mean, he literally said, help is on the way to the protesters. And, you know, not long there. In fact, I was under the impression that by January 5th, as early as January 15th, he was saying, let's go. And the military was saying, we're not ready yet. We don't have enough.
That is
yet.
A whole nother discussion. We got a whole nother segment to round it out. I want to talk to you about so many other topics, but they played the color revolution card. Didn't work. They killed the leadership. Yep. Didn't work. They did the bombings. Didn't work. Did the blockade. Mm-hmm. Didn't work. Every single option. It's like, in order to sell me on something, you have to show me proof of concept. Right.
That's right.
And there's none of that here. So we got like 2 minutes left.
You don't
left.
Have to do that in government. I mean, in government, it's just give me your tax dollars and we'll do whatever the hell we want with it. Right. That's why I think if you're right to put it like it's very smart to put it that way, because it basically there's a checklist they're going through. And, they're trying to see which of those checklists will achieve victory. We don't know what victory is. It's sort of like Schrodinger's victory.
It's a state of mind. It's state of mind, man.
Exactly. But I think that the next stage is pickaxe with a nuke, maybe. And if that doesn't work, then we're going to see this kind of weird hybrid proxy / limited ground incursion. And that's going to affect everyday Americans. And all as that's going on, by the way, we're draining the SPR, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve.
It's almost gone.
Yeah. That's right. Exactly. And so that means the economy gets worse. That means it shrinks. I saw Chris Martinson on Tucker's show, and Chris is brilliant. And he made the point that, look, the last time we were using 74 million barrels of oil was 2011. And guess what? That was the economy was 36% smaller back then. So we know at least if we keep going and we seem to be keep going, we're still going. Okay. That we're going to be 36% smaller in terms of our economy. And that's a best case scenario. I think this thing is heading into Great Depression territory.
I agree.
Within the year.
I agree. And I think that's what's going to make Americans wake up. I pray that we can get them to wake up a little bit
sooner.
By then
it's too late.
Yeah, I know, man. And that's why we broadcast so much is really I'm just angry and pissed off about all this stuff, man. And everyone out there, the lemmings on social media, online, the talking heads that promote war and promote more death, promote more bombings.
They're all paid.
I know,
they're
man.
They're all paid.
I know, but even then, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. Like, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world but lose his soul? Nothing. So, like,
they must really not want to work a day job.
That's true, but here's my point. To the people that sell out, do you not understand that there is free credibility on the table for anyone that rises up against this? Like, seriously, it's literally, we're going to witness a political extinction the like of the dinosaurs in the Cretaceous period. I truly do believe that because supporting this in the next 3 to 6 months, it's going to be untenable. Okay. God forbid, Lord have mercy, may it not happen. If they do tactical nuke, if they do ground invasion, if they do another color revolution, do whatever, it's only going to lead to an extenuation of the existing circumstances. Things are going to get worse and worse and worse. Thank you, Brandon. We'll be right back. Going to talk the Caspian Sea, Ukraine, Russia, and more on the Middle East. Thank you. Check out his social media there. We the Brandon. Follow him now.
A microscopic tag be implanted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Colin saying 21 years ago that, oh, yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha, 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 wonder who put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting the you know, base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health. What it's done is absolutely insane. Get masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite. And once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatic when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back to the best afternoon geopolitical show on the internet. I am your host, Rex Jones, and on radio, TV as well, joined by Brandon Weikert, top writer, geopolitical strategist, analyst at 1945.com, author as well. We're going to continue our discussion on all things Israel, I-Z-R-U-L, the Caspian Sea, Ukraine, Russia, and just kind of the global geopolitical roundup. We were just talking about nuclear submarines, Brandon, and you're somebody that's very aware of the technology and what's around, what's available. Let's go ahead and start off with this. What exactly is going on where Israel's got these nuclear subs surfacing?
Yeah, so the Dolphin class is the submarine you're talking about. It is a diesel electric, air independent propulsion capable submarine, which means it's very quiet. Doesn't have the range or endurance that a nuclear submarine has, but that they don't. Israel doesn't need that. Because they're just a regional, they're a local power, so they don't go really beyond the Middle East. They've got six of these subs. They're ThyssenKrupp, so they're German-built. They're very, very good. And last Sunday, the Israelis surfaced one of those Dolphin-class submarines, leaving Eilat all the way down through the Strait of Tiran, heading to the Red Sea. Now, this caught a lot of people's attention, not only because the Israelis rarely let these submarines be seen in public. So that was clearly they were sending a signal. But also, they were leaving Eilat, which is in the south. Now, those subs are based in Haifa, which is in the north. And so that indicated to people that I spoke to for that article you guys just showed that the Israelis have at some point repositioned or rebased at least some of their Dolphin-class subs so they can go and interdict in the Red Sea, go through the Strait of Bab el-Mandeb, and possibly even go all the way up to Iran and threaten the Iranian coastline with the submarines carry potentially 16 nuclear-tipped cruise missiles. So if you get, you know, you get one of them alone is enough to cause a lot of damage. But if you get all six together or even just two or three, you know, do the math, 16 times however many,
right?
That's a lot of nuclear power there.
No, 100%. And, you know, Americans were like, well, when we give them money, we give them aid, we do all these things. They have something called the Samson option, right? And that's if they're existentially threatened, they make everyone else existentially threatened as well. So it's something that everyone definitely needs to be aware of, and just the general escalation. I hate living in a world where we're even having to talk about this reality.
Yeah, me too. And if I can just add in,
sure.
When I was on Al Arabiya about 2 months ago doing a debate with Yaakov Armador, who was Netanyahu's former national security advisor. And in our debate, I was actually kind of happy how honest he was, but I was floored at how honest he was. Cause I was saying, you know, we have to get the Strait of Hormuz reopened. And if that means we have to do a deal, then that's what it has to be. That's what we have to do. And he got very dismissive and he goes, we have no opinion about the Strait of Hormuz. It means nothing to the Israelis. We don't care.
Wow.
And he said, that's an American problem. So I brought this up with somebody else yesterday, Matthew Ho, and Matthew pointed out, he goes, if you think about it, the Israelis have what they need in their little part of the world. And so really they don't care what we're going through. They kind of love what we're going through because it means we have to stay militarily committed now to a region we wanted desperately to abandon.
And that's that entire concept of that projection of force. And that's why we can't have anything nice here domestically, is because we got this capital city, essentially capital country, thousands of miles away. And we have to project that massive force, that trillions of dollars, to keep their stability in the region. And that's why he says the Straits closed. That's an American problem. No, that's a worldwide problem. That's a global problem. It's just not a problem for them.
So I was talking to somebody. I know a lot of old timers, both are on our side.
We
and
love
I know
them.
Some old timer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know some of the old timers from Israel too. And they still talk to me occasionally. And something I was told, was the reason that sub was put out there. It was a fail safe. If the Iranians reopen attacking Israel,
right,
the Israelis are very afraid that the Iranians will target their only two refineries in the country. And if that happens, then basically all of that natural gas and whatnot that they're sitting on in Israel, they can't do anything with.
Right.
And so they can't use it. And they're already seeing shortages of critical fuels in Israel. So that sub could possibly be parked off the coast of Iran. If the Iranians hit those two refineries in Israel, the Israelis will surface the submarine and fire their nuclear tip cruise missiles either at Tehran or, you know, wherever, whatever target they think is viable. Here again, we're talking about the nuclear genie being let out of the bottle.
Right. Well, let's examine that for a second, talking about the domestic situation in Israel, because, of course, the 12-day war that ended in large part because I think they wanted it to be over because they couldn't take the hits anymore. And they're in a very fragile situation. Yeah. It's a country the size of New Jersey with 9 million people. In a war that they started with a country of 90 million people that's the size of Western Europe. So just the math doesn't math on that perspective, but their asymmetrical advantage of having the nuclear weapon and having the ability to deploy that theoretically or practically, that's what gives them the oats, you know, or the nerve to do with the chutzpah. That's the word for it.
Yeah, the chutzpah.
Yeah. To do this type of thing. What's the situation in Israel like?
Well, not only does that give them the chutzpah, but knowing that Big Brother America is basically at their beck and call. Because I guarantee you, if we left the region overnight and cut all ties, things would get very different for Israel in terms of how they calculated these policies. They would suddenly become quite rational, I think. But because they know they've got those nukes and they've got Big Brother always at their beck and call, it makes them a little crazy. They think they can get away with a lot that they shouldn't be getting away with.
It's a power trip.
Shouldn't even be trying.
It's a power trip.
It absolutely is, especially with the current crew they've got running the country. That's definitely a power trip.
Well, so let's just, one second, because I know it's a little bit of slop, but it's also real news. Ben Gavir is a crocodile pit. Okay, they're talking about burning all Lebanon for every one of our mothers that weep. 1,000 of yours will weep. Collective punishment, ethnic cleansing. Yeah. Like they're cartoon characters. And if more Americans realize that, and that's why humor is really good, and that's I try to use a little bit of it to illustrate some of these points. You literally have Eric Cartman 2.0. This guy's Eric Cartman from South.
It's deranged.
Yeah,
it's deranged.
Monstrous.
I know a couple of. Well, I shouldn't even go. I know a couple of Holocaust survivors, and they're no longer with us. I can't imagine they'd be okay with this sort of behavior.
Well, certainly not, especially because this is the behavior that's going to lead to really, you know, the most anti-Semitism ever seen across the
world.
Because that is the evil of Zionism. It's saying, oh, you know, this ethnic identity, this religious identity, it's actually a nationalistic identity. This same state that we have from the 40s is a state we had 3,000 years ago because we say so, and America has weapons.
That's right.
That's basically the equation.
There's been nothing more damaging to the cause of, you know, of Jewish rights or whatever than Zionism. There's the single most damaging, I think, thing.
And they know they know it. They perpetuate. That's the Greater Israel Project itself. They say, oh, it's so bad for you everywhere else. You have to come here. Well, you guys are creating those conditions.
It's very perverse. It's very perverse. But I don't mean to go off topic. To answer your original question, which, forgive me, I'm forgetting now. It was, we were talking about
Israel and the domestic situation.
Yes, it is not good there. It is not good. And I know it's not good because David Wormser descended into my comments section the other day, telling me how wonderful it was in Israel and how wonderful the economy's doing. Of course, David Wormser is the lunatic who got us into Iraq. I mean, he more than anybody, he wrote the Clean Break memo, and I knew David once upon a time. And, he descended in my comment sections a couple of weeks ago to say I was spreading Hezbollah talking points.
Oh my God.
Anyway, it's not going well there. And here's another example, just a little vignette. Right now, the U.S. military, we've been so degraded in terms of our bases. We've had to reposition our very valuable tankers all in one spot in the very public Ben-Gurion International Airport.
KC-135s.
Yes. KC-135s. And we don't have a lot of these things. And they're essential, by the way. And the replacement for the KC-135s are not doing well. They have not been able to mass produce these things. They're in procurement hell. So what we have is what we have for the foreseeable future. And they are being targeted. So we've piled them in to the civilian Ben-Gurion International Airport. That is like Israel's so small, that's like their main international airport. They've got one, which is Ben-Gurion. So we're taking up all the slots for civilian airliners. This right now season in Israel is, Aliyah, which is their big, when all the Jews from around the world, all the Christians from around the world that are Zionists, they all come from around the world around this time of the year, go to Ben-Gurion International, and they go on their tours of the country. Well, we're taking up all the space with our military planes at Ben-Gurion. They've already had to cancel 50,000 civilian flights, international flights, into Ben-Gurion, and the Israeli Airport Authority is screaming bloody murder. The Israeli business community is going crazy because right now they need the tourism and they can't get it. Not that many people want to come right now, but of the people who do want to come, they can't get into the country because the KC-135s are eating up all the tarmac space. So that alone indicates to you they need the money badly. The economy in Israel is not doing well. It is basically a wartime economy.
Right.
You know, the people, the intelligentsia, the people you would need to rebuild the economy after the war, at least 600,000 of them have permanently left in the last 3 years. They're not coming back with their families. They have gone elsewhere. They've gone to Patagonia, to Crete. Some of them are going to Malta, Georgia. Some of them are coming back to the United States. But this is a huge blow in terms of brain drain for the Israelis. So the Israelis are not doing well economically. They're not doing well politically. You have a huge backlash against Netanyahu specifically. Even though the Israelis do generally support his policies in the war, they do not like Netanyahu. And so there's a lot of political issues with the, you know, the current situation politically. It's not going well in Israel right now. It's not. And they need the war over, but they don't want to end the war. But they need it over because their economy is not producing the way it used to. I mean, who wants to invest massive amounts of capital into Israel's burgeoning tech sector when it might get blown up at any minute? The capital flows are just not there the way they used to be before this war began. And they're not going to be there until the war ends. And the Israelis don't really want the war to end. So this is a very strange situation if you're an Israeli businessman.
Yeah, and I think they mirror us, or we mirror them as well, because you hear Netanyahu go, oh, the defense stocks are doing so good. The economy is incredible. But that's
not
a real economy.
Yeah, but those don't build the economy.
Yeah, it's not a real economy.
That's a parasitic economy. And, you know, there's a reason after World War II, the Truman administration was desperate to get us to demobilize the military en masse because they wanted all those young men to come back home and get back into the economy.
Yeah.
So, it's true that the defense sector, yes, it does boost GDP on paper, but it's not actually productive for building a competitive civilian economy. And the civilian economy is really what drives everything. A military economy, you know, that helps with winning a war, maybe. Yeah, but in terms of actually being a country, that doesn't help at all. It makes everything worse. It sucks up all the resources that should go toward the people, and it diverts it toward the military. Just look at the Soviet Union, right? What took them down? We can say Reagan. That's not really what happened. Reagan contributed to the downfall of the Soviet Union, but it was really the fact that the Soviets for decades were spending way too much money on their defense and not enough money on getting washing machines to their people. And that is what took the Soviet Union down. And we are now in the exact same position here in the United States that the Soviets were in the 1980s.
Right. I talk about this all the time. I've been talking about it since I started broadcasting again a year ago. There's going to be a new framework, a new security architecture globally that emerges out of all this. I don't know when it's going to happen, 5, 10, 15 years, but eventually there's going to be some new rules that are going to be drawn up. We'll be lucky to have a seat at that table because of actions like this and supporting nations like
That's
Israel
right.
that break these types of rules, whether it's the non-proliferation stuff, whether it's, you know, war crimes, initiating a war of aggression, which, of course, at Nuremberg, they said was the ultimate war crime. That's what we did by starting this war. I don't see a way out besides, you know, the MacGuffin of perhaps hitting Pickaxe Mountain and then maybe he leaves. But of course, I think that's just going to further escalate things. I think he did a good job.
Right, the enemy gets
that.
A vote.
Right. Talk about that. The enemy gets a vote because people here are like, I'll do an impression of someone that's called in. We're just going to bomb Iran and kill all the Muzzies. Like, what do you say to someone that says that?
Well, we will probably bomb Iran and kill a lot of Muzzies, but there's a lot more Muzzies where that came from.
Right.
And they're not going to be very happy that we're now on top of everything, nuking them or coming near to that. This for them then is going to make them think this is really an existential thing, not just against their government, but we're trying to kill the Iranian people. And the president even said the Persian civilization ends tonight, right? He said that before.
A big glow.
The Iranians, The Iranians see and hear that. Now, to us, that's, you know, as Americans, oh, okay, well, that's just the president. He's just vamping. But if you're sitting in Iran, you don't have that context. He's coming to wipe us out. So that's going to compel them to take a harder stand. On top of that, you had 15 million Iranians show up to the funeral of the Ayatollah, who we all, including me, believe the people hated in large numbers. That is clearly not the case.
You kill the leader. You kill the leader.
That's right. He's more than a leader, right? He's like their pope.
That's what I say.
You're killing the Pope and the head of state all in one. That ain't going to end well for a country that's very religious. The Iranians are deeply religious, and that's a big no-no what we did. So my point is, we can bomb them, and we've already demonstrated that. But where does that end? It doesn't end with peace. It doesn't end with surrender. These guys keep escalating. Why? Because for 30 years, they've had the ability to watch how we wage war on other countries in the region and to prepare for it. And the way they prepared for it is digging deep underground and building all of their factories for weapons and storing all of their weapons in these deep underground, honeycombed, advanced networks of tunnels that are protected by granite and hard to get to in general. And they can then fire their weapons through those silos underground, knowing we can never hit them from the air.
I've got the analogy for it. It's Batman versus Superman with prep time. You go, oh, well, Superman's going to defeat Batman. He's got laser vision.
Kryptonite gloves.
Yeah, exactly.
Kryptonite gloves.
They figured it out.
Right.
And of course, they fought a brutal war against Saddam Hussein where they lost 400,000 people. So there's their proof of concept. You know, a lot of them can die. Like they're willing to do that.
And you know what's funny? We talked about Israel's Samson option. I think Iran might have a Samson option as well. I think they do have a handful of nukes, and I think that they might not have them paired to delivery systems, but they might have them in such a way. And maybe that's what's really at pickaxe. I don't know. But I do think they do have a handful of nukes. I think they've demonstrated, though, they're not crazy. They haven't first gone to that. They've gone right up the escalation ladder every time we have, which indicates they're actually a rational actor. And I think, though, they probably also have their own option where if it does look like all is lost, yeah, they're going to start cooking off whatever they've got.
Right.
And I wouldn't put it past this regime because the regime is religious in nature. And by the way, the Trump keeps talking about, oh, the economy there is so bad. Oh, the economy. It is bad there. And that's partly largely because of our sanctions. But the economy is bad there. And yet there's still millions upon millions of Iranians who support the regime because the regime's source of legitimacy has never been predicated upon prosperity for the people. It's been built upon two things: their faith, the Shiite faith, as well as the symbol of Iran as the key source of resistance to the American and Israeli empires.
Yeah, and I heard Malcolm Nance talk about this. I don't agree with him on Ukraine, but I do respect him as a military professional, as a mind, of
Malcolm's
course.
Been stellar on Iran. He has been stellar.
I heard him talk about it, just referencing the Iraq-Iran war, and he's like, listen, you don't understand. It's total war. They have little kids with keys to heaven on their heads walking through minefields. You can't beat
that. Right.
You can't, and that's so powerful. Exactly right. I need to reshare that clip because it's very important people see it. Like, when you're going up against that, it doesn't matter how many true social meme posts you make where Trump looks like Slenderman. Like, it's completely irrelevant because maybe propaganda might work on maybe a Western country, even like Venezuela, South America, we're trying to run a PSYOP on. They look at what we've done. I watched Arachi. He's sitting in some interview and he's sitting there smiling like Obi-Wan Kenobi. And he's like, have you ever been to a meeting where everyone at the meeting knows they're going to die right then, right there? And you're like, okay, well, like, can we just leave you alone? Can we not get in a decade-long war with you people? And to our leadership, what are y'all doing? People around Trump, people co-signing this, it's really disturbing. You're going to kill everyone. You're going to be hated forever. Forever.
Yeah. Well, the people around Trump, I think it's important to distinguish. I think the uniformed military guys, I think they know full well. I think they know full well this is folly, but they are very worried about going against the president. I was told repeatedly that General Kane does routinely push back on the president. The president just doesn't listen. The people around him, though, the civilians, the Susie Wiles, the Marco Rubios, Seb Gorkas, all of these people, all these civilian, you know, people, they are the ones who are in hock to the Israelis and the neocons in D.C., and they're the ones who are really propelling him forward down this most self-destructive path.
Right. And, you know, we talked about Pete Hegseth a little bit earlier, talk about Rubio, just all the people kind of around Trump. When they're sitting there, standing there in front of the coffins and they're coming home, how do you just not have a moment of saying
they don't care?
I know, man. I know. I have a problem with it because I try to find humanity, but there is none. You know, there's a lack of humanity.
Those people have what they want. They have their Fox News fame. They have their cushy budgets. They have everything they want. They are satisfied. So when you have somebody like that, they're not going to rock the boat. And Trump this term, you know, we talked at the beginning of the Trump. I talked with Harrison about this when on Inauguration Day I was on with Harrison. And we were talking about how it did seem like Trump was more disciplined. And I said, yeah, I think that's because he's got Susie Wiles and she's a real taskmaster. And I think he's afraid of Susie on some level. It's weird. He's got this weird thing with her. But I actually think now, looking back on it for the last 2 years, the Trump first term may have been chaotic, but I'll take that any day because at least you did have alternative voices there.
Sure.
And I think part of the reason it was so chaotic is because you had a team of rivals. You had, for every Gary Cohn, you had a Peter Navarro, and everybody was doing their own thing. Now everybody's marching in the same direction.
Lockstep.
And they're all obsequious to the president. And that's the biggest problem, is they don't have anybody there who's telling the president, sir, this is lunacy. You should be focused on this instead of the war.
Right.
You know, my problem
is Trump clearly has a pathological need to be liked. Why is it only by the people who have hated him? Like Lindsey Graham, the golfing buddy. Lindsey Graham ran against Trump in 2016. He was like one of the first people to drop out. I don't think he was like formally declared or whatever. But like if you go back in ancient history, like these are the ancient enemies of Donald Trump.
Well, don't forget, in October 2019, I posted this clip a couple days ago on my Twitter. Trump was making fun of Lindsey Graham in October 2019 because Lindsey said it was a mistake for him to be talking to the Iranians and to be talking to the Taliban. And Trump said, oh, if Lindsey had his way, we'd be at war in the Middle East for 1,000 years. I don't want to listen to Lindsey on this. I don't know where that Trump went. I don't know if they're just microdosing his Diet Cokes or what, but this is not the guy of even 5 years ago. This is a totally different guy.
I have to agree.
His brain is gone.
I have to agree with Barnes. I think it's frontal lobe dementia. Robert Barnes, former Trump lawyer.
I think so too, but I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to go.
My opinion on this is just like the fundamental switch up. You run on a mandate to lead. You destroy the Democrats. You destroy Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and you throw all of that away. Tell us it's our fault that, you know, we're not being supportive enough and that, oh, if we don't win, the Democrats are going to take over. Well, you gave them a platform. That is the entire, that's what this war is. That's a campaign commercial for November.
Yeah.
That will play.
Well, I can tell you, that one is. You're right. I can tell you right now, I've gotten to know a handful of Democrats, and God, I don't agree with them on almost anything, but on the war, even guys like Mark Warner are coming across as very rational and stable and cogent. Whereas, of course, 10 years ago during the Russiagate thing, they sounded like kooks. But now, even they are sounding like very reasonable. And you're wondering, how did Trump get to a point where now all of these guys sound really good and they sound really wise? And Trump sounds like a detached lunatic, you know, like he's Slim Pickens riding the bomb all the way down to Target yelling, yee-haw.
Yeah, Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, I don't know. We seem to have a mad king in charge. Congress isn't there. I don't know what Congress is doing. I worked there even when there were Republicans in power in both houses and in the presidency. If the president did something that damaged the separation of powers, the Congress would get together and push back. They're not even doing that anymore. I mean, this is like, talk about a rubber stamp Congress. Trump is basically Caesar already.
Right. No, I 100% agree with that. We're going to cover that and more. We're going to get into Ukraine and kind of tying these two things together in that global energy war that we're talking about. There you go. Riding the bomb. It's a big, beautiful bomb. Big, beautiful explosion.
The biggest. The biggest. People tell me.
That's right. People are saying it. Yeah, that's my favorite. People are saying it. It's true. People are saying it. But thank you, Brandon. We'll be right back. We're going to do one more segment with you. Really looking forward to that. Go to thealexjonesstore.com. You need methylene blue. You need apparel. You need water filtration. We got it all available for you and more at thealexjonesstore.com. Thealexjonesstore.com. I'll see you after this break.
Folks, I'm Dr. Bigley. Today's presentation will be about methylene blue and you.
Dr. Bigley, what does methylene blue do?
Great question, Billy. It has to do with your mitochondria, the powerhouse of your cells. Let's bring out the mitochondria now!
Right.
As I was saying, methylene blue supercharges your mitochondria, which does wonders for your mental clarity, stamina, and overall pep. Just look at him go!
Gee, Dr. Bigley, he must have drank a lot of methylene blue. He was bouncing off the walls.
Right you are, Billy. He sure drank a lot. Let's continue, shall we?
Billy, did you know that methylene blue can cure communism?
No, sir. Can I see?
Why, certainly, Billy. Take a look over there.
Behold, Ivan, a Ruski doggedly determined to undermine our way of life.
Careful, Billy. He bites. Oh. Look. Vodka. Potato hooch. Watch. The communism is slowly leaving his body.
Wow. The methylene blue cured the red right out of him.
So, how do you feel?
Gee, Doc, I don't know what got into me. I feel like $1 million now. Say, where can I get some more of that blue stuff in case I become retarded again?
You can find it on the alexjonesstore.com.
What does .com mean?
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, alexjoneslive.com is tomorrow's news today.